When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, State Senator Chris Larson from Milwaukee. Of course, he's a Democrat who was elected in 2010. We don't hear about many Democrats being elected in 2010. Senator, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Sly. I was good to be on.
That wasn't our greatest year.
No. My best night was winning the primary, and then my worst night was all the news coming in the night that I won. I remember I won, everyone else lost. Majority slipped, and then the assembly majority slipped, and then the governor was lost. Yeah, it was all pretty rough.
Yes, and since then, Wisconsin has returned to about 1956 when Walter Kohler was governor.
Right.
I call him the 56ers. I want to play something for you before we get rolling. This is conservative pundit Ben Shapiro. I'm sure you've heard of him. Listen to what he recently said about people who work two jobs. Do you have anybody in your district that works two jobs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here's what Ben Shapiro said.
Well, the fact is that if you had to work more than one job to have a roof over your head or food on the table, you probably shouldn't have taken the job that's not paying you enough. That'd be a you problem. Also,
what do you think about that?
Wow. Wow. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard the guy speak. That's just, I mean, I think they have that mindset of like, you know, of a point of privilege of sitting in an ivory tower of being able to look down on the world and say, here's how you should go about doing it. I think most people, and I would consider myself in that, of like, look, you're busy. You're busy with your kids. You're busy with family. You're busy with work. You're busy with school. There's no grand plan. And if you have a chance to actually get to the kitchen table to measure things out and say, okay, what's going well and what's going not, a lot of times you have to take the wage that's given to you for the hours that you can get, you know, especially in this with the economy that we've got right now, where it's working for those at the top and for those at the bottom. You're having to work two, sometimes three jobs to be able to try and make ends meet.
Well, this is
the median. The average cost of a one bedroom apartment in Milwaukee just peaked over $1,000. A couple of months ago, and to try and pay for that on minimum wage is nearly impossible.
This is why I was a little disappointed. Governor Evers was on CNN earlier this summer on the Van Jones show. It was a Saturday night, so not many people saw it, but he was asked about Medicare for All, and he said he was opposed to it. One of the reasons he gave was that, we've got 2 million people that work in the insurance industry. The Democrats don't want to throw away those votes. I don't really think that's a reason to keep this current health care system that we have.
No. I think that there's a grand rethinking of how we do things in America, Sly. I mean, a lot of it, we've just kind of been on autopilot since the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, back then, one of the incentives to keeping a good employee was to offer health insurance, and so health insurance was distributed by workers, and that's been the system that we've been under for a century. Other countries have moved along and said, okay, this is a right, this isn't a privilege, it's something we need to guarantee for folks. We did that for the hardest to insure population in the form of Medicare, but we haven't extended it to the rest of people. And I think, yeah, maybe there might be a break for some to say, okay, maybe the insurance industry might not be making out as well, but in the end, what's the goal? Is the goal to make sure that the insurance agencies are happy, to make sure that they're doing well, or is it to make sure that people are healthy and happy and make sure that we are doing it in an efficient way?
Well,
Go ahead.
You're supporting Elizabeth Warren. I'm supporting Bernie Sanders. I think they're both making a mistake when they're talking about Medicare for All in not pointing out the future and not pointing out that more and more people are working more than one job and their tenure at jobs is much shorter. I think it needs to be a little more forward looking, because when I hear this whole notion of, well, you know, there are people that work at GM that love their health care. Well, do the people at Lordstown, Ohio, like their health care that just lost their jobs? I think it needs to be, do you know what I mean? I don't like to sell things with fear, but we've got to look a little bit towards the future.
Yeah, I think they're being pretty honest about it. Bernie and Warren are being more honest about it than some of the others.
No, I think they're being honest about it. I just think they need to explain why this cobbled together system that we have, that was actually built by insurance companies,
right,
not healthcare providers, isn't good for the future.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to do in the form of a 40-second soundbite.
It is.
When they have a rebuttal in a debate with 9 other people on the stage. but yeah, I mean, if you're a political nerd like I am, and like you are, we pay attention to that stuff. But I don't, you know, unfortunately, in just the way the media works and just the way that debates work, you have to repeat this stuff over and over and over and over and over before it finally sinks through. We have to talk about the future of the healthcare system, and we have to talk about what the ideal is that we work towards. And I honestly think that's why I like Elizabeth Warren. I think Bernie is a great choice too, and I think the better presidential candidates are those that are putting forward a strong, positive vision for what we're going to do as a country, not just in response to Donald Trump, but in response to what's happened over the last decade or the last few decades. I'd say, okay, here's where we've been, here's where we're going to go. And that's why I think it's for me, whenever you hear Joe Biden, his response of saying, well, we need to get rid of Donald Trump, well, you know, look, for a lot of people, the economy moving back in a positive direction didn't actually get down to them. You know, it got to those who were making higher wages. But minimum wage hasn't increased in the longest time, I think, in history, right? It's still at $7.25 an hour. You still cannot make a living off of that. And so I think we need to talk about, okay, we've got to beat Donald Trump, then what? Then what can we do, right, in terms of wages, in terms of health and healthcare, you know, in terms of education? So those are the presidential candidates that are doing better and will do better over time because they have that larger vision that are attracting people.
As far as Wisconsin goes, obviously the Republicans are incredibly intransigent about expanding Medicaid. How many people in Wisconsin that work don't have health insurance?
That's a good question. I don't have the number off the top of my head. But yeah, it's pretty significant. I mean, there are 82,000 people who would benefit immediately from Medicaid being expanded in the state. And those are people who, I mean, if you just think of that lifestyle, what they're doing, it's one thing for people like Ben Shapiro and Republicans to say, ah, yes, that's a choice that they're making. But if you recognize that, look, these are folks who are trying their hardest to figure out a way to get their ends to meet, to be able to get health care coverage, those are folks who have decided that, look, they cannot afford to be able to pay for it. And what happens is they're basically playing the lottery with their health, with their life, that nothing's going to go wrong, that they're not going to need medication. If they have medication, if they have a prescription, they're just going to not take it or, you know, pay the out-of-pocket expense, which is just, you know, abhorrent, and then split pills. That means that they're going to end up crashing through to the emergency room. And, yes, it's going to increase everybody's costs, but at the same time, we could spend, we could actually spend less as a state and cover them, right? If we took the Medicaid expansion, it would actually bring in additional funds to the state, and that person, those 82,000 people living that hell, wouldn't have to anymore. That's what's really at stake. On the other side of the equation, Sly, and this is a real frustrating thing, and you know this, the other side of the equation is a political calculation that says that because this was done by Barack Obama and because it was done by Democrats, they're the last holdout of Wisconsin is one of the last holdouts of expanding Medicaid into our state. And because we're not doing that, we have missed out on over $1 billion that could have come into our state that we could have spent on on health care for people and could have had access to be able to spend on other programs. There is no, other than a highfalutin philosophical argument, it's largely just let's try and stick it in the eye of somebody who hasn't been president for 3 years now.
Well, but it isn't just this. It's legalization of marijuana, even for medical purposes. Arkansas, Utah, Oklahoma. I mean, some of the most conservative, red, deep red states have at least gone that far. Not here. Not in Wisconsin. Not in the...
So are we just the last hole? I mean, is this just the... Have they not gotten the memo fly? Is that... I'm just trying to figure out what's going on because, yeah, every other state has done some form of... every state that we touch has done Medicaid expansion. Every state that we touch has done some form of marijuana legalization or decriminalization. And either, you know, and like you said, other states have done this. So what... I don't know. What is the holdout? What is... Have they not gotten the memo? Is the fax machine broken?
You know, Robin Voss is a rather unpleasant person who it would be very hard to have a conversation with, but you know Scott Fitzgerald. He's a pleasant person. I totally disagree with him politically. Have you talked to him about this? I don't, maybe he's not pleasant to you. He's always been pleasant to me.
On this one, I haven't talked to him, but I've heard secondhand conversations that it's just, I think he's got the old school mindset that, you know, marijuana, that we're still in the war on drugs, right? Like, these are like the Japanese soldiers who were left on islands and didn't know that the World War II ended and were still camping out, right? Like, these are folks who are still doing the war on drugs. They still think that that's happening. And they've actually, even just a few months ago, maybe a year now, they actually did, there's a, not them specifically, but those that agree with that philosophically, they did an expo out in Waukesha talking about, like, reefer madness and how this is a gateway drug and how, and it's just like, guys, come on, you know, this is, it, I mean, it took us, I think it was 11 years from the time that we, of prohibition to finally repealing it. It feels like that this is taking a lot longer for the rest of the folks to catch up. And say,
I have news.
This is fine. It's not the end of the world.
Senator, I have news for you. My grandparents during Prohibition in Milwaukee may have gone to a speakeasy. They did not obey the Prohibition.
I think that's you know, you can watch a Ken Burns documentary. You can talk to your grandparents. Everyone drank. People still drank, right? It's kind of like, oh, marijuana is illegal. What is it? Why? You know, it's serving as nothing more than probable cause from being able to lock up people or to harass people for other things. It's not protecting anybody. Look, if people want to, as long as folks are not driving. Right, and that's where I have an issue. I'm a strong proponent of making sure we're stopping drinking and driving, and same thing with drug driving. But if it's a large extent, people who are getting high are staying home, right? If you look at like Denver, which is the most famous example, one of their biggest boons was the takeout industry. Like every restaurant had to adjust its model because if you didn't have takeout or delivery, you were missing out. People aren't going out; they're not going out and hurting people. And so to my mind, why not do this? And again, it's always worth looking at the obverse, right? Sly, which is, we are locking people up for this. There are people rotting away, and we are spending a small fortune. It costs more. We're spending more to incarcerate people than do pay for our colleges in the state, and we're not better off for it.
Well, you know, people say, well, that we don't lock people up for first offense marijuana. That may be true. But we lock them up for second offense, and it's very expensive having people on probation and parole. So, yes, people do go to jail for second and third offense marijuana. It does happen, and it is happening, and Wisconsin's way behind the curve. We'll take a short break and be back with State Senator Chris Larson from Milwaukee. Slysoffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep Sly'sOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Sly'sOffice.com.
We're back at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695. State Senator Chris Larson with us. Now, Senator, you and I have politely disagreed on guns over the years. I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment and haven't supported bans on semi-automatic rifles. But when it comes to the Republicans and guns, I have to tell you, I'm a little bit in a state of shock, again, on how intransigent they're being. Let me just play a clip here from WMTV in Madison.
Two recent mass shootings, Governor Tony Evers held a press conference this morning saying it's common sense that the background check process should be the same for everyone. Under current federal law, only licensed gun dealers must conduct background checks when selling a firearm. This means anyone can bypass the background check by purchasing a firearm from an unlicensed seller, such as at a gun show, online, or at auctions. The new bill would force a background check for all firearm purchases here in the state.
No matter what kind of firearm you're buying or where you're buying it from, the process should be the same for everybody. That's not a radical notion or concept. It's a moderate one. In Wisconsin, we just call it common sense.
GOP leaders have said they don't support such a move, and Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said the legislature was very unlikely to take up a universal background check proposal. Live in the studio, Caroline Peterson, NBC 15 News.
Again, there we go, reflexively just saying no.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that this is coming to a breaking point, right? Why there was a rally in Milwaukee, as there were rallies nationwide of folks demanding stronger reforms around guns. And this is an issue that is getting more and more attention because, frankly, we are the only country in the world where mass shootings happen on a regular basis, where our gun deaths are just exponentially higher than every other country. You know, and this isn't just citizens shooting each other. This is police. Police are dying too, right? There was this report out of England where the 10th police officer was killed. And, you know, in America, they're saying, well, the number, you know, over the course of 10 years is in the thousands because of guns. And it turns up the temperature. It makes it that much harder for everybody in communities. Having a universal background check is literally like the least we can do, right? It's literally saying, here's a law we thought was a good idea to make sure that everybody who buys a gun or wants to buy a gun has to pass a criminal background check to make sure that they're not a terrorist. Right? Like that should be pretty common sense. We already have that system in place. It's easy to check. You know, I had a friend who just brought a gun the other day, took 45 minutes to do the check. It's easy. And so what's the problem of trying to say every gun that's sold should have a background check done on it? And I think I'm not going to begin to try to understand the mindset, because I think it is just driven by cold hard cash from gun manufacturers that are trying to push this agenda of saying, look, the more guns there are, the more guns get sold. And it's a disgusting model, and I think that people are onto it. People are ready to call for common sense reforms. And the people who aren't, I think voters are going to remember that.
Well, even at, you know, and there's different problems with different guns in different situations. Obviously, in urban areas, You've got a problem where handguns are the weapon on a regular basis. Obviously, what happened in, I'm trying to think if it was in your district or not, where a police officer was killed, you know, serving a search warrant with
right just outside, yeah,
just outside your district. So, You know, my view, I have never called for banning guns, for banning semi-automatic weapons as far as long guns. But I do think it should be harder to get them. And I've come to the conclusion that maybe a solution on that would be, as opposed to banning them, do what some countries do and make sure, you know, because there is a legitimate reason for people to target practice. That's what they're used for. They're not used to protect your house. They're just not. They're not actually a very good weapon to protect your house. But to keep them at the gun range, to keep them in a secure facility, and to make it tougher to get them, and maybe much like with automatic weapons, which still do exist, but you've got to have a license, so they're very, very rare. I do think because of the damage that they do, when they get in the wrong hands, the ammunition that they do, the damage they do, I've kind of come to the conclusion that I've rethought my position a little bit and that we've got to do a better job of securing them.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think a lot of people have come to that same conclusion, right? Which is, yeah, I get that side of the argument, but if we can be saving lives, and this is shown to do it, right? We have comparisons now where you can look at other states, other cities where they've enacted reforms, and homicides drop, right? And we know that we can actually do this, that it's enforceable. Sure, there's going to be a person here or there that slips through the cracks, and I think somebody could, you know, there's always somebody saying, you're not going to solve every single problem. Well, that's not the point, right? The point is to try to be able to reduce death and to reduce the carnage, and that's something that we could do. Literally, universal background checks is stop number one. And unfortunately, we can't even move on in the conversation to talk about extreme risk protection orders, right? Where if a person is exhibiting red flag behavior, if somebody is, you know, committing domestic violence, if they have been involved in a violent misdemeanor or violent felony, if they are somebody who is talking about harming themselves and harming other people, that that law enforcement can go and temporarily, at their discretion, say, okay, we're gonna hold on to this person's guns until the red flag is down. That can save lives. That will save lives, and that is something that is supported by 80% of gun owners, right? There's more that we can do beyond that, and I think that at the bare minimum we have to start, because what's happening now is just we're just supposed to be the alternative is just to be comfortable with this and say we're going to be fine with just the daily shootings, that we're just going to be fine with mass shootings, and that frankly we're going to be fine with the number of gun suicides that happen because we're lawmakers are relinquishing their duty to actually do their job and pass laws to protect people.
Yeah, you've got kids. You've got to explain to them why they have these drills now in schools, right?
Yeah, it is beyond insane to think that we are training kids to say, you know what, because lawmakers refuse to inconvenience the gun manufacturers and do the right thing, every child in America is supposed to prepare themselves to barricade a door, right, or to try and figure out how to hide and try to figure out what to do if a gunman comes into their classroom. Like, what war zone country are we living in that's something we're training our kids, right, for a real possibility? And instead, wait a second, why don't we go to the other side of the equation and say, let's make sure that we're licensing these guns that are used by mass shooters. Let's make sure that we are ending the multiple rounds, right, of people having extended magazines or extended clips.
With 100 bullets, yeah. Let me ask you, let me just switch gears here before we finish. The Democratic Convention coming to Milwaukee, that's got to be a very proud thing for you. Is the Fiserv Forum and UW-Panther Arena actually in your district or just outside?
No, everything is within a stone's throw, so everything is literally just...
Is the river the decider there? Is the river your border?
River's the border.
Yeah, right.
Town. Yep.
So just outside your district.
People will still be drinking. People will still be there having a good time.
Still be on the zone. What do you think this means for Wisconsin? Now, you know, the place you hold a convention doesn't always mean that they're going to win the state, but do you think it's helpful?
I mean, look, if there's the DNC has hired summer fellows, right, of having people on the ground, knocking on doors, forming relationships. So they've started early. I think they recognize just having the convention doesn't necessarily do it, right? I think the Democrats did North Carolina one year, and we lost it. Republicans did Minnesota, 2008, and lost it. So having the convention doesn't necessarily match up the that party winning it. But I think if we're doing the right things, and frankly, look, Wisconsin is usually, if it's a close presidential election, this is one of the closest states. You know, so I think having the convention here, yes, it's very exciting, but I'm advocating that there be some type of action either immediately before or after where we're going to go out, knock on doors or make phone calls to actually talk to undecided voters or talk to those who might not have voted in the last election, but would make the difference this time. So if we're doing that, if it's not just a self-contained party, then yeah. Then I think it can have that impact and we can win 2020. It's not a guaranteed thing, though. We got to work for it.
Well, and I hear this debate about, well, you've got to energize the minority base in urban areas in order to win. And then, you know, other people are talking about getting some of the blue-collar voters back that slipped away in 2016. Don't you really have to do both?
Yeah, I mean, you have to do all of that and expand the electorate, right? Like, I think it's getting everybody to turn out that didn't last time around, people who didn't think it was going to be close. You know, Hillary Clinton was up 6 points in the latest poll in Wisconsin right before the election. So I think recognizing, like, look, no, we could absolutely lose, and getting all those folks to turn out, but also expanding, getting young people engaged, getting them to believe in a larger cause and not be, de-energized by what's happening with Trump. Getting new people into the process, that's always a key part of the equation. Wisconsin has, and this is a testament to both parties really working, is we have among the highest turnout in the country, you know, election after election. So there's not a lot of new people to bring in, but there's always a generation that's in college that hasn't voted in presidential elections, and it's on us to make sure we're reaching out to them too.
State Senator Chris Larson from Milwaukee, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Thank you, Slice.